The close but not quite tour continues on Scrambled Eggs. Hey everyone, welcome into your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on Crack Sidewalks. Joe McCann, Phil Bush with you to talk about the week that was and the week that shall be in Marquette basketball. And Phil, boy, two tough losses, but boy, we got enough for the highlight reel this week, didn't we?
Holy crap, we got a lot of stuff to talk about. Some of it really good and some of it really bad.
Yeah, I think we're going to start the show where I think a lot of people would like us to start, because I think a lot of us are a little salty after that Georgetown loss, Phil. Marquette played overall, I think, really well in that game, and it's just so disheartening. I feel bad for the players and the coaches, because I know they feel they're playing very well and improving as a team. They just don't have the record to show for it. And another tough loss to Georgetown, and I hate to be blame the referee guy, but man, there were some calls late in that game that were just maddening to me.
Right. Well, I mean, I have to say that I think this was, even in a loss, this was Marquette's best performance of the year, I think, which is what makes it even more frustrating, because, you know, there's going to be ebbs and flows, and we'll only try and do a light 35 minutes on how awful the Big East officiating is, but you know, that's what makes it worse, is that was the best game Marquette's probably played all season, and it wasn't the imbalance of calls. It was that there were 50-50 calls that seemed to go invariably Georgetown's way, especially at critical moments.
Yeah, you know, I know, thing is, that's tough for me to evaluate with Josh Smith and guys that big in general. I mean, when guys bump into him, he could be fouling them without even trying. But still, it just seems like he got away with a lot of bumping and hip checks, and I just can't believe he lasted the whole game and Luke Fisher didn't. And when Luke Fisher wasn't in the game, even though Luke Fisher offensively was pretty helpless against Josh Smith, I mean, when he catches the ball 10 feet out there, he was definitely not going to back him down and really couldn't do much. But having Luke out there was so beneficial to Marquette, because Georgetown still had to account for him, and I thought that really opened up a lot of things for the guards. And Marquette, I thought, attacked the basket really well in that game. But the fact that he was still in the game late, and then there was that there was a call in overtime that,
yeah, it was that Juan was going for, or no, Sandy, yeah, Cohen was going for a rebound.
Yeah, I think it was somebody like Hopkins just like lost the ball. And they got just a ticky tack foul on Cohen, which, I mean, in overtime there were only two field goals made. There was a three on each side, and the rest was all free throws.
Well, and the three that Georgetown hit is exactly why Luke Fisher being fouled out of the game and Josh Smith not is exactly why that was so detrimental, because Luke Fisher was much more beneficial on the defensive end than the offensive end. Not necessarily because he could stop Josh Smith, but it forced Marquette, or it allowed Marquette to spend less time doubling Josh Smith. And that's exactly what happened off the action with Luke Fisher out of there in the overtime. They called the ticky-tack foul, which, it was a loose ball. It was a stupid call, especially after Marquette had played strong 35 seconds of defense and forced up a terrible, you know, forced Georgetown to take a terrible shot late in a shot clock shot. But, you know, on the ensuing inbounds, essentially they fed the ball to Josh Smith, and then they had to double off the corner three, and that gave Trey Campbell the open look that he hit the three, and then Georgetown really never looked back from there. So, it's those kind of plays where, you know, in isolation, maybe they don't mean anything, but when you take them in the grand scheme of things, and it always seemed to be the same official making the same calls. I'm not calling it a conspiracy theory, but it was just maddening, especially when the one official, I don't know if they showed it on TV or not, but being live in the stadium at some point early in the first half, one of the officials whistled the ball dead and then ran over to the Marquette bench and essentially yelled in Chris Carriwell's face about something. I have no idea what. And from there on out, we never got another call.
Yeah, you know, being official conspiracy guy has got to be like, that's the worst thing for me as a fan. But when officials miss calls and they're constantly against you is what drives me crazy. And like I said, I don't want to blame the whole thing on officials. Marquette had chances to win the game and had chances to make a few more shots. But dang it, I mean, those calls just did not help and just really put Marquette in a hole that, you know, they have to fight and scratch and claw to get every win they can get right now. And, you know, when they're dealing with a stacked deck, just unfortunate. And I feel bad for Marquette because, gosh, I thought they had it. If Matt Carlino's shoe size was one size smaller, it never would have happened.
Well, that's exactly why the officials make the difference. Like, when you look at it, the same official had, in my opinion now, obviously, in the Carlino's instance, there's not enough video evidence, which let's, you know, Fox Sports, come on, let's get some more cameras in an arena. But, you know, the same official called Dwayne Wilson's, you know, kind of, you know, reckless three that brought it closer. He called that a two with like a minute 42 to go, and he took off 3 feet from behind the arc. Right. And then turns around and calls Carlino's shot a two, which is one of those critical moments but the way it worked out is if it had been called a three and one of the other officials had both hands up, so there was a disagreement. One official called it a two and another called it a three. And if they decide to call it a three, there wasn't enough evidence to overturn it and Marquette wins. But they decided to call it a two. There's not enough evidence to overturn it and Marquette loses.
Yeah. Playing that overtime without Fisher hurt. Like I said, he could score against Smith, but just to have him in there to have the defense account for him. And just to have him.
Well, yeah, I thought once we went to overtime, I didn't think we had a real good shot without Luke Fisher in there.
Yeah. So, but man, it was so disheartening to me because the game that we see Derek Wilson posterize someone go down as a loss. There were so many moments in that game that will probably be on Marquette highlight reels, like maybe in the montage next year, like next year's opening montage on the big screen at the Bradley Center, and just Marquette highlights that air on television or you know, Fox Sports uses, whether it's Derek Wilson's dunk, Matt Carlino's circus shot, Carlino's shot at the end of the game that tied it, the thought won it for a second there. Gosh, I mean, there was just so much to break down, but Derek Wilson almost made me flip out of my chair when he posterized Paul White there.
The stadium went silent for like half a second and then erupted louder than just about I've ever heard it. It was kind of one of these, and I even tweeted it, wait, Derek Wilson can dunk? Oh my God, Derek Wilson can dunk. And yeah, it was just crazy.
Yeah, I think everyone kind of went like, oh, posterized. Oh my gosh, it was Derek.
Yeah.
Was that his first dunk?
I cannot recall him ever dunking ever before in a game.
Yeah, he definitely has never dunked on anyone. I can't remember a time like maybe he got a bunny dunk on a fast break or something like that.
I've never seen him dunk.
I do not remember him ever dunking. I remember him missing a flat-footed layup last year.
I don't, but
I never remember him dunking. And just the fact that it just stunned everyone, and I thought that would be a big momentum play. Maybe it was a little bit, but it really wasn't a huge momentum play in the game. But boy, he got the crowd up. I think all the student sections, their all jaws all hit the floor.
Right.
And man, I love that play.
It was a great play. The only way it would have been better if he had been a little less Derek and it hit the and one free throw.
Yeah, that would have been nice.
That would have been the 1 point difference.
Could have been.
Yeah.
But, oh, man. But that speaks to a bigger thing in that game, though, is the way Marquette did attack the basket. You know, they didn't posterize people all day, but I thought they did a good job, even though Fisher was not able to get to the basket. I thought a lot of their guards did. Dwayne Wilson did a great job. Sandy Cohen got inside and got some easy buckets. And I thought they had a pretty good game plan. You know, once they realized Fisher wasn't going to get much offensively.
Well, they did have a good game plan, and that game plan is certainly abled by the fact that they apparently went insane from three-point range. In the first half, they were 5 of 10, and in the second half, 7 of 11. They shot 64% from three-point range in the second half. That's going to open up some driving lanes because they're going to have, you know, Georgetown had to drive hard, and it wasn't just the Matt Carlino show, though I did enjoy him having only 12, or Marquette only having 12 points of offense and all of them Matt Carlino threes to start. But Georgetown had to drive at the perimeter very hard. And that gave Dwayne and Matt opportunities to drive the lane, which was extremely beneficial. And like you said, they took advantage of being able to drive at the hoop and not really, you know, it's kind of like the antithesis of what happened against Wisconsin. They drove the lane and they had a plan, and they were able to finish, whereas in the Wisconsin game, they drove the lane with no idea what they were going to do with the ball.
Yeah. The guard play continues to, I mean, it's nice to see they have stepped up. After a few podcasts ago, we were wondering if the guards were going to contribute as much. It seemed like the numbers from the guards were a little disappointing, but the maturation of Dwayne Wilson has been great. I think it speaks great for next year, especially when he's probably going to be the star of that backcourt. 26 points for him, hit some big shots late in the game, and I almost wish he could have played more, but he, 32 great minutes from Dwayne Wilson. He's going to be a star at Marquette, hopefully for a while. And I think it was also good that Juwan Johnson apparently, he responded. He's in that he's back on the floor, still not playing a lot, but I guess the way Carlino and Dwayne Wilson are shooting the ball, there's probably not that much room for him out there at the moment. But he had a poster dunk himself against St. John. So I guess the positive I'll take from Juwan this week, Phil, is that he played. So obviously he's responding in practice, but maybe still not a high impact player. Well, but I think he has a role.
The thing is that Juwan is somewhat frustrating to me in that, you know, Derek Wilson had 32 minutes in the Georgetown game and played 31 minutes in the St. John's game. Derek Wilson is fine, and now that he can, I know he can dunk, I'm more excited, and he can hit corner three. So, I mean, his game's rounding out nicely here in the senior season, but I would like to see Derek Wilson playing less minutes. That's going to have to come. I mean, Dwayne and Matt Carlino, Carlino played 43 minutes in the Georgetown game. Dwayne and Matt are kind of at max minutes. So to take minutes from Derek, they've got to go to essentially Juwan Johnson, and I'm just not seeing him earn him. He's got the physical tools. He looks like a basketball player, but I don't know that mentally he's put it all together yet, because he still continues to drive into trouble and kind of be turnover prone. And I just don't know. He only had 15 minutes, and it seemed like a game against Georgetown and especially St. John's from an athletic standpoint, where we really could have used him, and it's just not there. I don't know if it's a coaching thing or what's going on with Juwan. I don't know what your opinion is.
Yeah, well, you know, I think you saw the microcosm of Juwan Johnson in that 1 minute stretch against St. John's, where you saw the freak athleticism when he got that big dunk and really brought the Marquette bench to its feet. And then on the next possession, he had the ball on a break and kind of forced the issue and turned the ball over.
Yeah, went so, 1-on-4 or whatever it was.
I mean, he looked like he was going to try to go for another poster dunk, but like the defense was well ahead of him and he turned the ball over. But yeah, I think that's a good summary of it. The potential is there. You see the athleticism, but I still wonder if he'll ever, be a star guard at this level. But the concern is, of course, next year there are two spots opening up in the backcourt with Derek Wilson and Matt Carlino graduating or exhausting their eligibility. So in next year's backcourt, it's Dwayne Wilson for sure, and everything else is kind of TBD right now. And you would think Juwan Johnson should have a spot there and should be an excellent player and play a lot next year. But I think right now he's got to continue to earn those minutes and continue to improve and become more of a scorer off the bench. And I don't know what needs to happen there, if it's the coaching staff getting into him, or if it's an effort thing on his part, or if it's just a maturation process and he just needs to work on his shot, work on his discipline, I guess is a way of looking at it. He still has a ways to go, and who knows, maybe if he can be, by the time he's an upperclassman, can contribute as much as, say, Juan Anderson is right now, I think I'd be satisfied with it. I mean, not every guy in your program is going to be an NBA player. Some guys just have to fill a role, and if Juwan Johnson can just grow into a role of a scorer off the bench or maybe even become a starter, I think I would be satisfied with that.
Yeah, well, I think the thing is, and everyone, I think a lot of people are kind of point at the coaching staff and say, well, Juwan Johnson should be getting more minutes. My God, he's a top 100 player and all those sorts of things. But I think what we're really seeing is Juwan Johnson was highly ranked and highly recruited, but he was an athletic guy. Like, I think he could out-athlete players, which is not a thing. But, he could use his overwhelming athleticism.
Oh, yeah, but I know what you're saying. Like, in the high school level, just being the best athlete on the floor, which he probably was 9 out of every 10 games he played, he could just
easily drive it by. Yeah.
Yeah, easily get by anyone who was guarding him.
And, right. And now
you get to the college level, it's just not as easy.
Right. Now he's, you know, he's at, you know, I still think he's very athletic and perhaps more athletic than some, but he hasn't had, you know, he doesn't finish with his left hand really, or, you know, or just have a ridiculous amount of speed, or, you know, some sort of amazing crossover or something like that. So he can't overwhelm people with his athleticism at this level. So he's got to find something else. I think he's got to find a mid-range jumper. We saw Dwayne Wilson do that a couple of times, get into the lane and stop, you know, 5 feet short and hit a pull-up kind of leaner or runner or whatever. And I think if Juwan Johnson can do something like that, because right now three-point shots aren't his thing. So if he can
17%
right
entering this, so
and statistically that's probably generous, because I think he's something like 0-for-9 for his last 9 three-point shots. You know, I think he's just got to find something else in his game, and I would hope the coaching staff is working with him on that.
Oh, I'm sure they are, and I'm sure that's going to be like a strong emphasis in the upcoming offseason, is continuing to work on his shooting. I mean, if they can get Derek Wilson from last year to this year to, you know, at least he can go in from a guy who can't throw it in the ocean to a guy who can at least make an occasional three, I think they can add something to Juwan Johnson's game as well.
Right. Well, and you know, kind of the example of this is Sandy Cohen. Sandy Cohen is really, the last two games, he's starting to show that he's shaking off the freshman inexperience and is starting to put a nice little game together.
Yeah, I think he is a nice all-around player. And I guess when I was talking about the backcourt next year, with Marquette being a much bigger team next year, he may slide into that two-guard spot next year, honestly.
Right, he could.
Because, yeah, so I think he is definitely a guy who long-term will be a very nice player for Marquette. It was kind of like rock bottom for him, I guess, at the DePaul game when he didn't play at all. But then he came back next game, responded, had a nice game. He still shows a nice outside shot. He can still shoot a little bit, and I think he's only going to get better there. And, of course, he's going to get stronger. That's the one thing that jumps out at him when you look at him, is he is skinny as a rail. But, that's going to come with time, as he's only, 18, 19 years old right now. So he's only going to add muscle and become – I think he'll be a really, really good player long term. All part of the learning process, as you say, Phil. Respect the process, and that's
right.
All part of the process. But I like what I see from Sandy Cohen more and more each game, and he did hit some nice shots in that Georgetown game that kept Marquette in it, kept it close, showed a lot of confidence getting to the basket and getting some tough shots. So
and he showed some real gusto in the St. John's game as well, and even drove the lane pretty, or drove baseline pretty hard and showed some skill and talent that, you know, I didn't necessarily see from him all the time. I expected it was there, but he's starting to be more aggressive and take what's his as opposed to deferring to everyone else, which I think will only benefit the team as you diversify the scoring. They don't key in on, you know, if you can put Cohen, Dwayne Wilson, Matt Carlino, and Luke Fisher out there with, you know, probably Derek Wilson, I guess, at this point. You know, you've got four extremely solid scoring options, and you start to force defenses aren't going to take just one thing away. They're going to have to take multiple things away, which is where you start to really be effective.
Yeah, hopefully the shooting we saw in the Georgetown game is a sign of more things to come, because, you know, shooting 52% from three for an entire game probably won't happen very often. But, man,
they shot better from three than they did from two.
Yeah, they did, actually. That probably isn't going to happen that much, but if it's going to happen again, I would not hate it.
Right. I would welcome it okay.
So, certainly, despite the fact that there were two losses in the past week, Phil, plenty of positives to take out it, both highlight-wise and just looking at a few individual players, as we've just discussed. But the fact remains, it's still two losses, and I know that's the frustrating part for Wojo and the team, the staff, is just close but not quite so often. And you look at the five losses in conference play, and, you know, one call here and maybe a redo on one possession there, or one more shot to fall, and they could easily be, instead of 2-5, they could be 5-2 or 6-1. You know, they were in every loss. They've had a chance or had a moment where it looked like they had a shot to win, and they, or whether it was just hit one more shot or get one more stop or have one call go their way. So I guess the question is, Is the close but not quite tour going to continue? Are we going to be dealing with heartbreaking loss after heartbreaking loss all the way into March? Or can this team flip the script and or are some of these going to start going their way?
Well, you would think it gives them, you know, experience in closing out games. I mean, we saw that heartbreak in DePaul where they were up big and then just collapsed, and then they turned around the very next game and stuck in one with Providence. I think the thing is, this team needs to play with a lead. They're just not getting it done when they're down late. Kind of the scramble from behind, they don't seem to be able to quite get it get over the hump at the end of games. I think it's going to continue. But I can't tell you why exactly this team is fighting so hard and is in so many games, but is not putting together a total. You know, I don't know if it's coaching, I don't know if it's the players, but something is kind of keeping this team from putting it all together. And I don't think it's just, well, the other teams are more talented, because I think Marquette's got as much talent as the other teams. There are depth issues and there's, you know, there's mitigating circumstances, but there's no reason, like yesterday, there's no reason Marquette shouldn't have won that game.
Yeah, I guess I disagree a little bit. I would say, you know, talent could be an issue in that there's just not, they could just use a little more. I mean, just to have one more piece, like another big to throw out there and just alleviate some of the pressure on Luke Fisher would be nice. Another scorer on the perimeter would be nice. You know, just to have one more athlete that can make a few more shots or just get a few more rebounds. Yeah, being shorthanded hurts, and I think that's one thing that kind of holds him back. But yeah, I mean, the talent's there, but I do think a lot of the other teams in the league do just have just maybe a little more, and it's not a significant margin, but I think the margin is significant enough that's making a difference in a lot of these close games. As far as coaching is concerned, I think Wojo and the staff is getting about as much as they possibly can out of this group. And like, are there some guys that maybe we'd like to see perform a little better? Sure. I mean, we've already talked about Juwan Johnson and some of the younger guys are still learning. But, I mean, I think the way Dwayne Wilson has come around certainly can be attributed to the coaching staff. I think it's fair to say maybe, though, that they could probably expect a little more out of Luke Fisher, who has been pretty quiet in conference play. Some of that may be foul trouble, but you know, when he gets matched up with a sizable big, he has struggled a little bit. So yeah, maybe that's that you can file that under maybe just have a little more talent or just a little more something, just another body or something to help Fisher out down there. So I think, yeah, depth and, you know, like if you could just inject just a little more skill, like this is Madden, if you could tick everything one more. One more notch to the right, you know, everybody's rating just one little notch to the right. I think maybe some of these games would go the other way. Like I said, there is talent. They're not an untalented team, but the fact that they've been so close speaks to that. I mean, the gap between first and 10th in the Big East is not that much.
Yeah, well, I think some of it is, I guess I agree for the most part. I think there's some, you know, there's definitely some places where, and I don't say this to bag on the coaching staff, because overall I think they've done an outstanding job, and despite the record being what it is, they have exceeded my expectations to this point. I thought there would have been more growing pains out of
I would expect a few more blowout losses, really. Mm-hmm. The fact that they've been close to winning every game has been, I guess, it sucks they're losing, but it's still been nice that they've been interesting and competitive in Big East play.
Right, exactly. But, you know, I do think there's some opportunities. You know, I think Dwayne Wilson sat out a little too much. He had 32 minutes against Georgetown yesterday. I would have seen him get 35 or 36 the way he was playing. But, you know, there's ticky-tack stuff there. There's, you know, heat of the moment type things. Overall, I don't think the coaching staff necessarily there, or I certainly don't think there's any glaring issues from the coaching staff. And I think one of these things, and maybe this is why it's really so maddening, you know, the team, I agree with you, they're one or two players away from really putting it together, but I think there's just an element in luck involved. I mean, they kind of talk about Bill Barnwell at Grantland for football kind of talks, you know, statistically there's a way of calculating luck. I can't presume to understand exactly how you do that. But it does seem like this team is just unlucky. They're not getting a bounce at just the right time, or they're not getting an official's call to go their way or what have you that's kind of keeping them. And I think it's one of these things. take the Georgetown game. If Carlino's foot is a centimeter and a half further back and there's a clear view and it's a three-point shot and they win that game, I think that's one of those games where, see, we can win the tight game where we've kind of got to come from behind and fight, and that kind of self-perpetuates itself. Right now, until they see that happen, it's almost the self-fulfilling prophecy where they have these tight, tough games where they're fighting to the end, and then they're just not able to get over the hump.
Yeah, I think it, what was it? I guess we're looking at, what, 4 years ago now, when there was, seems like it was Marquette lost close game after close game, and they finally went, then they went to Connecticut and just won a squeaker at Connecticut. Like, finally, we won a close game, and like they got a few more, and they, I think that's when the whole team bubble watch thing kind of became popular, and they eventually, Marquette did get in. I think they were an 11th seed that year, and they, that's the year they upset Xavier. But I think just, like, if that shot from Carlino would have been a three, I think it would have been a nice confidence boost for the team, say, just to reaffirm what they've always believed, is that they are still as good as any team in the conference. If they could have beaten the team that is, as we record this, alone and first in the Big East, that may be tied by the end of the night.
But yeah, thankfully, DePaul, the madness of DePaul at the top seems to have ebbed a little.
But DePaul is not going away, though. They keep beating teams. I thought for sure they would lose like 10 straight after they got off to that start. But, I mean, they're still hanging around there at 5-3, and who knows, they might actually finish, you know, sixth in the league if this thing keeps up. But yeah, I think Marquette, despite the losses, I think the guys on that team probably still feel they are as good as anyone in the league, because the two teams at the top, right, two of the teams at the top that they've played, they beat Providence. And they were, like you said, they were a shoe size away from beating Georgetown.
And they were up big at DePaul.
Yeah, that's the team that's right now in fourth place in the league. They absolutely should have beaten DePaul. I mean, that was just a brain fart, that one. That should have never happened. But I think, hopefully, you know, I joked on Twitter, if DePaul keeps this up and gets in, like, bubble discussion as, like, a top three Big East team, it would be awesome if Marquette knocks them off in the season finale. But I would think DePaul's going to keep falling, but now I'm not sure, just because every time I turn around, they're competitive and they're beating teams. They almost beat Seton Hall the other day. They did beat Seton Hall. It was Butler that they almost beat.
Yeah, they almost beat Butler. Who Butler turned around and crushed Seton Hall today. So, you know, all things are normal in the Big East.
Yeah, just another grind. That's what it is. But I guess that kind of speaks to the next game, Phil. Marquette now has two more home games. And we, you know, as fans, we certainly hope they can get a couple wins. It would have been nice to get a couple wins here at home before they hit back on the road for a tough back-to-back road trip when they go to Villanova and Seton Hall. It would have been nice to get that one against Georgetown. But who knows what to expect from the Seton Hall team, Phil, coming in, because if they come off they've lost
four out of five.
Yeah, 4-5, they lost to DePaul. They got crushed by Butler, who, you know, is probably a tournament team, but still, just to get humiliated like that. But on the other side, they are supposedly getting Isaiah Whitehead back, their star freshman who is supposedly going to be an NBA talent, maybe not this year, but in the future. So who knows how that team will play with him back, because when he first left, Seton Hall actually played a better team game without him, even though they were missing their star player. But when he gets back, who knows what to expect from him, recovering from, I guess it was stress fracture that he was missing time with.
Well, yeah, that's going to take some, you know, that's one of those things where if you're going to have to play a team with a player of that caliber, so to speak, coming back, you want to maybe do it the first game that player's back, because they don't have run time. They've kind of learned to play one way. They kind of remolded into a different image, and now that Whitehead's going to come back and he dominates the ball a lot more than do the rest of the Seton Hall players, and so having to change that style and dynamic, you know, but it also makes it tougher for Marquette to scout what they're going to do and what the matchups are, because they don't really have a firm idea of how Seton Hall is going to play, so it's going to be very interesting.
And you would hope that they could get that win, though. I would think Seton Hall and maybe even Butler would be winnable games, just because they're at home.
I really do think that Marquette wins the next two.
That would be awesome. I'm going to say what I said last week. I would be happy with one win this coming week. Just get me one win, and I think it would be a nice confidence boost. But I think beating Seton Hall, who currently, as we're recording this, is ranked, but they're not going to be ranked by the time this thing hits the air when the game is played on Wednesday. but a team that still is has a very high RPI, still has a very good shot to get into the tournament. But yeah, to beat Seton Hall, a team that you know you're kind of looking up at in the standings, just to get another conference win, I think would just alleviate some of the frustrations that the team has been experiencing after three straight losses. And I think Marquette certainly has the ability and the talent at home to beat Seton Hall, who is struggling a little bit. So we'll just have to see how they match up with Whitehead coming back and with Gibbs. Certainly, though, Seton Hall concerns me for their ability to shoot the ball, and we'll see how they do.
Right. Well, I'll tell you this much. I'll guarantee you Marquette will be competitive in this game. And we'll be in the Butler game, which, you know, looking forward, whatever happens with these two games, one thing, if we're looking for silver linings, one, you know, this is good experience for next year, and two, you know, these kind of games, at this point, it's clear we're not going to make the tournament short of winning the Big East tournament, which, you know, given all that's going on, not necessarily outside. I mean, a team can get hot. Look at Syracuse all those years would just get hot during the Big East tournament, and that's kind of what this team is shaping up like. They know they can be competitive with – we haven't seen them against Villanova, but they can be competitive with every single team out there. So it just takes 3 or 4 days of being really competitive and sneaking away wins to do something.
Yeah, even though, you know, obviously making the tournament as an at-large is completely out of the question, and it just it's not even worth discussing. But as far as those players are concerned, they should absolutely still talk about making the tournament, and that should still be their goal until they are absolutely 100% eliminated, and that would come down to the Big East tournament. So right now, the realistic goal that this team has to set for itself is to put itself in the best position to make a run in New York. And they've been competitive. They've been close with every team in the Big East, so there's no team in the Big East that Marquette would face where I would say there is no chance of them winning this game. Maybe Villanova, but Villanova's been beaten. They can be had. So I think, and just the way Carlino shoots the ball, you know, he could do the Jerry McNamara thing and just get hot over 3 or 4 days and make it very interesting.
Right.
Would I bet a dime on it? Would I bet a dime on it? Heck no. But no matter where this team finishes, even if Marquette finishes ninth in the league, I'm still going to be very interested in the Big East tournament just to see what kind of effort they put out because, you know, historically, Phil, all these conference tournaments, not just the Big East, the teams that go in there with really nothing to lose tend to overachieve, and the teams that are locks to be in the tournament tend to underperform because they're like, all right, we're in the tournament. I'd still like to win this thing, but we don't necessarily need to be diving on the floor and
getting injured.
Twisting ankles as we get to the tournament. So, like, Marquette can play with any team in the Big East, and right now it's just a matter of, who knows, maybe they can get enough wins to finish sixth in the league. Maybe. Is that far-fetched? Maybe a little, but it's not ridiculous.
Well, right.
If you can win two games this week, suddenly you think that's a realistic goal.
Well, yeah, like we said, though, I mean, they've been competitive in every single game. Is there any reason to believe they can't go, you know, they went 2-5 in the first 10 games. Is there any reason to say they can't go 5-2 in the next 7 games? You know, could this 14 games into the Big East conference season, could they be 7-7? It's possible.
Yeah. I wouldn't count on it too, but you look at, say, the next few games, Seton Hall and Butler at home, you would definitely think those. Well, every game's going to be tough. I'm not even going to say that. You would definitely think those are games you can win. At Villanova, probably asking a lot. At Seton Hall, might be pretty tough. You get Xavier at home, winnable.
Right.
At Creighton, always a tough place to go, but they're last in the league, winnable. And then you got Villanova at home, maybe asking a lot, but still it's at home and anything can happen. So, yeah, Marquette could make up a lot of ground, or make up some ground in the next few games and get some wins. But obviously, they're all going to be challenging, but with the way they've played, it's just a matter of getting over that hump, getting that one last shot that doesn't fall. Hopefully, you get an official's call that goes your way for a change. And, yeah, Marquette's going to get a few more wins here in conference play. I don't think they're going to hit rock bottom. And as I've said on many podcasts, they're not going to quit. They're not going to just be totally deflated. Probably shouldn't use that word, but totally, just totally out of this thing and just totally give up and say, well, screw it. You know, we're not going anywhere. I think they will still, up until they are eliminated from the Big East tournament, I still think they'll be fighting and with the idea that they can beat anyone in the league.
Well, here's the question. Would as a fan, would you trade, you know, because I get that people are frustrated with the record and what's been going on and want more wins, obviously. But would you trade, you know, maybe this isn't a legitimate trade, but would you trade one more win, but they got the games they lost, they got blown out of? You know, I view the record as not necessarily reflective of their capabilities and their talent. And I don't know that I would trade a win, one more win, to have this team just demoralized in a couple of games when they lose.
Yeah, just going out and you saying maybe you can I could have the St. John's win, but that means they would have lost to Georgetown by 40 and getting
Right.
embarrassed by Xavier. Because that's more demoralizing, I think.
Correct.
Because then they would be taking the floor every night thinking we're way behind everyone else.
Right, exactly. They'd be going, and we'd be going in, oh man, this is a game we probably don't have a shot at all. I mean, as a fan, we should be excited because every game is a possible win. The ones we've seen haven't been, but you know, sometimes that's just the way it breaks, and you gotta. You know, you gotta hope that the next game they play will be the one that it falls on your side of the line as opposed to the other teams.
And that's what I love about honestly being in this league is that the gap between first and last is not that big. Whereas opposed to say the SEC and the ACC, I mean, say the gap between the top and bottom is pretty significant.
Substantial.
Yeah, and then same in the SEC. SEC might be a one bid league, although that one team could win the whole freaking thing. But SEC, I mean, I think there's just a huge drop off after Kentucky. But in this league, you know, when Villanova plays Creighton, it's you know, it's probably going to be a tough one. Well, we'll see how the next week goes. You know, I think will Marquette get a win or two? I really hope so. I am confident, honestly, that they will come out of this week with one win. I don't know which game it'll be. But I think Marquette is going to get a win this week, and I think it's going to be a nice confidence boost and probably a relief for some of those players and coaches who've just been a little frustrated that, you know, after three straight losses and now sitting currently as we record this in ninth in the league.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, I'm going on record. I think they win both, but they're going to win. They're going to win some more games, and they're going to continue to be competitive. And I say it all the time, but we just got to respect the process. I mean, the coaching staff is learning, the players are learning. We're you know, as fans, we're learning. We're all going to be in a better place come this time next year. I feel extremely confident in that.
And hopefully we continue to see more from Dwayne Wilson as he continues to grow and mature, and maybe even one more posterizing dunk from Derrick Wilson.
Oh, it how great would it have been if he had done that on the last game of the season and had found a mic somewhere, dropped it, and just walked off, never to be seen again.
That would be a heck of a way to go out. Maybe we can get a maybe he can posterize somebody in the Big East tournament. That would be
That would
absolutely
be
fantastic.
epic.
All right, well, so hopefully it's going to be a good week for Marquette, and we'll check in with you next week. As always, we thank you for listening here on Scrambled Eggs. You can always check us out on cracksidewalks.com. That's where we post them. We're on iTunes as well. On Twitter, you can send us your thoughts. I'm Joe McCann3. Phil is MOOF23. And, of course, we have a Facebook page for Scrambled Eggs. We post the blogs on there. Phil, let's get a win this week.
Yeah, let's get at least one, and we'll go for two.
All right, go for two. And not talk about deflating things either.
No.
Have a great week, everyone. Seashells and balloons.